you can't feel your most creative when you're in an environment where you constantly feel oppressed and depressed.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that the ballet world can look to other industries where work environments are more productive and psychologically healthier, etc., and try and integrate that into the dance world like ASAP.
Hello and welcome back to Red Lips and High Kicks with me, Lydia Holt. Thank you for tuning in to season two. I can't believe it. We're back and we're better than ever. I am so excited to be in your ears again, filling you with wonder and love and these amazing stories from amazing people that I have found for you. It's going to be a great season and I'm really excited to put my business lady brain on and really thinking of the things that I want to hear, that I think should be heard, and the love that should be shared right now. It's kind of been an interesting time, obviously, with the world coming out of lockdown, finding our feet, arts, finding the theatres again, how that works, how we move on, really, from what we've gone through. And it's not a problem I can solve. It's not a problem we can solve overnight, but it's an important thing that we're facing, and we've got to take some time and be patient. It's hard, obviously. Anyway, on to brighter and lighter things. Today, I'm talking to Ashley Wilson. I'm going to keep my intro quite short because Ashley has so much to say and of quality, top-notch goodness to share with you, so I don't want to faff on with me. But Ashley's a South African dancer who's danced all over Europe and America. She started off at Semper Opera in Dresden before working in Berlin, in London, and now she's at the Met Opera Ballet in New York. She is an incredible person. She's done so much, and she really is this wealth of knowledge. She's also one of those great stories that I keep telling you about, of people who've had a less than conventional route, of people who've done different things but made it to the top and made it their way. And I think it's really exciting to hear from her. She honestly has got so much to say and such a variety and breadth of knowledge that I think is really, really integral and important, especially now more than ever, for young people to hear that it might not go to plan, but it's going to be your plan and it's still going to work out for you. So I think you guys will really enjoy it. Obviously, I'm going to do my plug, my big, big plug. Follow us on Instagram at redlips.highkicks. Give us a subscribe on any of your Apple podcasts, Spotify, whatever you're listening to us on. Sorry, I'm so excited. I can't get my words in. It used to be cool, Lydia, be cool. I'm sorry if I'm talking too fast. Anyway, please follow and share and spread the love. I'm so excited to be back. And I promise you, we're going to be coming up with some really good stuff and important stuff. So I hope you tune in. You know what I'm going to say. Have a great day and stay excellent. Hello, Ashley. Thank you so much for joining me all the way from New York. We're really going transatlantic. It's so great to talk to you today. How are you getting on?
Yes, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to chat to you today.
Great. And obviously, we have both shared a kind of common past. You lived in Berlin. Obviously, I'm living in Berlin now. And you've kind of been all over the globe to us. So I'm sure there'll be a lot of things that a lot of people can relate with and have in common. But my first question to be for you today, obviously, this has been a bit of a whirlwind of a year. But what has this year taught you the most?
You know, it's okay to be slow. We've been forced to really take a step back from the pace of our lives, not only generally as young people, but as artists, I think so much, and I really feel like this, but so much of our time is spent kind of in a rush to achieve. You know, if you're in a company, a rush to get promoted, a rush to move to the next place. And I'm definitely one of those people that have learned the hard way that, you know, impatience is definitely not going to lead you to the most fruitful places. So I've had a really good lesson in patience and moving slowly and being more intuitive from watching plants grow really slowly to feeling like the updates that we're getting from the places where we work or the countries where we live and what's so dynamic and changing with COVID. You know, I've learned to just hang on and wait and not assume and not predict and not think about what's next. So that's been a really good lesson for me.
Yeah, you're right. And it's something, especially as dancers, but you're right, as young people, we just always told that life is short, there's not enough time, like live. But actually, there's a lot to learn from taking a beat and watching the plants grow. It's so lovely, but so true.
Absolutely.
So obviously you are South African, and I think I'm very intrigued to ask you, and correct me if I'm wrong, but in South Africa, is there much of a horizon and much of a place for when you grow older to become a dancer? Are there those role models that you can look up to? I feel very lucky that in Europe, you know, we have such a rich history with opera houses and ballets and, you know, operas and arts and whatever. in South Africa, was that an obvious career path for you to follow? Were you kind of going against the tide a lot?
Well, I think you have to look at the history of, you know, countries like Australia, even the US, and in South Africa as a British colony and a Dutch colony, you know, we inherited a lot of these kind of European art forms. And specifically with South Africa during apartheid, there was this want and need for society to really mimic what was going on in Europe. And obviously in very destructive ways, but in a lot of ways, for example, the ballet companies during apartheid had a really high standard and had a really good name. So as we moved out of that, which happened in around 1994, when Mandela came into power, there's such a huge shift in what happens to funding. There's a huge shift in what happens to, you know, what art means, how it reflects the people. And so when it came to the institutionalized classical ballet, you know, schools and companies, there was definitely a shift. Mm-hmm. And so when I was growing up, if you wanted to have a fully fledged classical ballet career, you wanted to ideally get a ticket out of South Africa and to explore, you know, what it meant to really be a part of the Royal Ballet or the Paris Opera or whatever it may be. So that was definitely the focus for me, even though I didn't want to be a ballet dancer growing up. I went to a really academic school and I wanted to go into statistics and financial modeling and all of that. And I did ballet on the side very recreationally, you know, once or twice a week. And when I graduated from high school, it was a point where I had to figure out if I really wanted to pursue classical ballet, I had to do it elsewhere. Now, a lot of people will argue that in South Africa, there's a thriving arts and culture scene. There's two big ballet companies that are, you know, quote unquote, funded enough to support their dancers. But I think when it comes to the society really seeing ballet as a, you know, a relevant art form that really expresses what people want to see and what people want to, you know, create and talk about, I personally, and I might get backlash for this, but I personally think that if things like classical ballet didn't exist on stage in South Africa, then maybe it would open a place for, you know, whether it's more indigenous dance or more kind of innovative dance styles to really breed and grow in South Africa. But as a training, I think classical ballet can have relevance in any society. And the tools and the skills that you learn as a ballet student are so powerful. And so I love classical ballet as a teaching method. I go back to South Africa often, you know, working in outreach programs in dusty classrooms. And I'm working on a project now where I want to bring global talent to South Africa to teach the youth. But as a, you know, if you really want to challenge yourself and you put in all these hours as a classical dancer, I personally think that that's best to seek it in Europe.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. And it comes probably from a level of ignorance. And I want to learn more because it is such a different culture and such a different way of life. And we are so spoiled in Europe to have every city barely, like, not even that far apart, has an opera house and has three or four feeder schools. And it always really intrigues me how people from who live so far apart, far away, get into Europe and kind of find those roots and see that inspiration when it's not on their doorstep.
Right. And when it's so built into the state, you see that in Russia as well. It's built into the state, it's built into the people, it's built into the heritage. And there's something so beautiful about that. And I've even experienced this in America where, you know, my kind of experience of dance in America, largely to the general person on the street, lives on television. And so you very quickly have to adapt to the culture of dance in America by knowing how to work in front of a camera, by, you know, branching out to do other dance styles where you can make more money or whatever it may be. So in whichever place I've been, I've tried to really adapt to what dance as a culture, you know, how it plays out in those places, but also how to maximize what I can do as a dancer to fit in and, you know, make a living out of it.
Yeah, of course. And I think that's, it's such an example of what dance is really like today. You know, maybe we were fortunate, our teachers kind of had those really linear paths where it was like school, company, you know, you become a teacher, whatever. It's very, very easy. But actually today, it's just not like that. There's so many mediums to to be successful. Success looks different for every person. And actually, you can never have the same success as you thought you had when you were younger. I think I definitely found that, is that I didn't think I'd be doing what I'm doing now, but I am, and I'm loving it. And for you, was that what you experienced? Obviously, you worked in, like, you know, one of the best ballet companies in Europe, Semperoper. Mm-hmm. And from there, you kind of, you've moved and learned more and changed your path. How was that transition for you?
Well, I've got to be totally honest, and COVID's been a good time for us all to look back on our careers and to really evaluate, you know, our own personal connections to our careers. But in all honesty, I really struggled to find my place in the conventional pathway, especially as a classical dancer. You know, I started really late. I came from a country where my passport is not an easy ticket to any kind of visa, work visa. So I was begging for scraps often. When I went to auditions, I would be thrown out just because I'm South African, or, you know, turned away for my height. There were, you know, everyone has their challenges, but mine really piled up. And so if I was given any kind of opportunity, grab whatever I can get and then make the most of that opportunity. So I think this haphazard journey that I've been on has been a result of me kind of just feeling things out and going with the wind. And I was often not satisfied enough where I worked. And so I wanted more. I wanted to, for example, after working in entertainment in Berlin, I was like, I want to be back on stage. I want to work in the biggest theaters. You know, I want to perform at Royal Albert Hall, at Palladium, because my grandfather is Scottish. And so I had paperwork to live in the UK. And that opened the door to really challenge myself to get back on those, you know, stages that are really, really hard to access, especially if you've not grown up in that country. So I think that even though it's been fun to have this very multifaceted career, it's often been the case that doors were closing. And so I had to really grab one open and fling it open. Otherwise, I would just be sent back home, essentially.
Yeah, and there's so much that you've unpacked there, like going from small things like visas that you have no control of, you can't change, but are, you know, a very apparent problem that so many dancers face today, to your height. And you're right, it is, and I, again, as a criticism, I don't think I felt prepared enough when I left school for a wiggled path, for a path that wasn't linear, and for one that maybe where I actually was in the driving seat, where I got to choose, actually, I'm not really satisfied, I can change lanes. I'm not really feeling this, I can change again. And I think when you find that strength, it's where you've reached your full potential. But it is really hard. And I think, yeah, not enough dancers today are encouraged to accept the fact that it won't be linear, but also to take control of that.
Absolutely. And I'm very kind of passionate about this when I speak to young dancers. Our careers are changing, but there's a fine balance. Because on one hand, individualism, especially in like the commercial community, where, you know, people who look different and people who have their own style are really celebrated and they book jobs over and over. You know, as a young dancer coming from a ballet institution, it's really hard to know what makes you different, because you've spent your whole schooling trying to fit into what the corps de ballet would be. But on the other hand, as much as you want to encourage young dancers to be special and to, you know, put their best foot forward, you also don't want young dancers to make excuses. Oh, I'm too tall, therefore I can't pave the way in any new way, or I'm South African. And I think I really learned that very young, because I think all of the companies I've worked for, I've been the first South African.
Wow.
And so you can be the first, you know, 5'11 dancer to be hired by whatever company, or the first South African dancer to be hired by whatever company. And so it's this really fine balance between knowing, you know, that you want to have something to say as an individual artist, as a young dancer coming out of school, but you also don't want to make excuses for really just, you know, settling for less because it's too hard or no one's done it before or whatever that may be. And I think, as you know, we've noticed everything kind of collapse and will inevitably rebuild post-COVID, our careers will be even more fluid and even more dynamic, and we have to be on top of adapting to that as dancers.
Yeah. You're right. And I think it's great that, you know, with social media and stuff like that, that ballet is becoming more popular and topical and fashionable, I guess. And you're right, those sort of like, if you look different, if you're kind of a bit more exciting than just the average girl, you do get that extra coverage, or maybe just a half a door, you know, a little bit. It's just open for you a little bit. But it is also very hard to be like, well, if you haven't got that, where do you go? And you're right, it's that getting that balance between, okay, I might not be her, I might not be him, but like, it's not, you know, I can still do it. And I think you're a very prime example of that. I'm so excited to talk to a girl who's taller than me. Like, again, I'm not the tallest girl in the world, but it's stories like you, and it makes me so sad. Like, I could have done with your voice and your message when I was like 14 years old. My mother is 6 foot and I adore her with every fiber of my body, but I knew every time I gave her a hug, I was like, oh my goodness, what happens if I get taller and taller and taller? So it's, I needed to hear your voice. And I think it's so inspiring that you, like you've just said, it's never been an excuse, it's never been a roadblock for you, it's just been how you've adapted. Was that easy? How did you kind of get to where you are now?
Well, I think you have to look at physically how you dance, first of all. I mean, being almost 6 foot has its physical challenges. Your extremities are so much further from your center of gravity. Your ability to jump is a lot harder. You almost, sometimes I would kind of look at boys jump and turn and plié and mimic that, because I would notice that structurally their bodies were somehow similar to mine, and my hips were the same height and my torso was the same length, et cetera, et cetera. So I think physically you have to get over those challenges, and once again, not make excuses. I think when the speed was turned up for the girls to start the exercise, I would challenge myself to do the exact same exercise at the same speed of a girl who's 5 foot, and work with as much speed as I possibly could. That was something that I definitely had to learn quickly in America, when the Allegros are a lot faster in general. So I think your ability to unleash incredible expansive movement on stage, and you know, 3 steps into a grand jeté can take up the entire stage, which is so incredible to watch, and it becomes your superpower as a tall dancer. But the way that it can affect the body, you know, you have to be so much more careful about conditioning your back, for example. And I think you have to understand the physical challenges first, and not only for if you're tall, but also if you're petite. You know, you've got to be able to get your weight around, move your weight around, so that in an audition, you're not completely bowled over by the tall girl, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So I think the physical challenges happen first. And then the second challenge took me a really long time to accept. And that was really sitting down with myself and looking at what I could offer the dance world. If I was going to be a partner, I had to find someone who was incredibly tall. And just recently I did Andrea Bocelli tour together, with lots of complicated lifts, etc. But because he was the correct height for me as a partner, we were able to really achieve what any other height partnership could achieve. And then there's been times where I've been strategically partnered with a male like half my height. Mm-hmm. And that has taught me a lot as well, because you can still have this beautiful symbiotic relationship on stage, depending on the choreography, where you're working as a partnership, but in an unconventional way. So the moment I realized, okay, Ashley, you're 5'11". You know, you look this particular way, you know, this is the structure of your body, without having an emotional attachment to it, I could realize and accept that this is what I have to offer. And these are the avenues that are kind of giving me something back in return. And at that point, I started to get ownership over my height and really learn how to move my body in a way that was attractive, rather than always feeling like it was something that worked against me. And that was when my career really, really took off.
That's so interesting. And I wrote it down in big letters here, what you said about looking at the boys. And that's such a good point, because yeah, from day one, you know, boys, especially in schools like I went to, you know, boys and girls are taught separately, and the boys have so much more time to jump, and they slow the music down, and they teach them how to be strong for large jumps, X, Y, Z, and they prepare them for the fact that they'll be big. And you're right, it's such a shame that as tall dancers, maybe we're not given that sort of same right. preparation and like foundation. And I again, with, you know, in British, you know, we're known for like quick footwork and stuff like that, and having these petite ballerinas, and every teacher I had was gorgeous little petite women, and they taught me great allegro, and I feel very grateful that I for that. But you're it right. is it's trying to find out how you take something and translate it to you, because everything you said, yeah, you we will eat up more space, and we will have to take care of our backs, and we will have to take care of all those things that maybe other people don't think of. But it is just that kind of acceptance that, yeah, you have to decide that this is your body. Like you said, do not get too emotionally attached, and make it work.
And there's this really beautiful area that I've been living in since coming to terms with being a tall dancer. And that is that gender roles are changing within society, and what is accepted as, you know, all kinds of fluidity and expressions of gender, they're coming together sort of in on the fringes of society first, and then they infiltrate into culture and art. And so coming to terms with the fact that I may be as tall as a man and I feel very feminine because I'm a woman, but at the same time, I can really play with that androgynous ability to move my body around, throw my body in space as a man, or as a male dancer would traditionally, and then really kind of capitalize on that power and on that strength. And last year I shaved all my hair off, and it was really done for a laugh, essentially. But I ended up really starting to realize that interesting kind of middle area that you can live in as a woman or as a man, it's you know, whatever you may identify as, it can be a really fun place to experiment and to find your own voice and your own art within it.
I mean, like, exactly. That's such a lovely sentiment, and you're dead on. Like, times are changing, and it's such an exciting time. It does happens from the outside in, and we have to really, like, you know, lean into it. Like, think of the range and the curves and the colors that we can create when we like push those barriers down, and we don't limit ourselves to, you know, girl, boy, tall, small, whatever it is. You're right. This, like, that's where the good stuff happens, where the magic stuff happens. And I think you're right. Like, hopefully, fingers crossed, is that it will just keep getting better, and there'll be bevies of young girls and boys that will not have to think that they're not good enough, or that they're not right, or they don't fit the box that they should be in, because actually times are changing.
Exactly, 100%. And I'm excited to see how things are going to be shaped from now on, because so many dancers who are currently in this system of feeling quite limited or feeling like they don't fit the mold, I think there's a lot of people that are speaking out now about it and talking about their experiences of, you know, being treated differently because they look different or whatever that may be. And I think our generation may continue to shape things in the dance world in a very exciting way. And I think that it's really about knowing what you have to give and treasuring that, but at the same time building in your respect for the art form. I think particularly with classical ballet, I mean, I was really, really beautifully trained by someone who has a very deep love for the art and the tradition of classical ballet. And so because I practice classical ballet as much as I can, and I go back to the bar and I, you know, kind of pay homage to the heritage of me even being able to learn this beautiful art form, I don't want to stray too much from it either. And so I think the ballet world in particular is kind of walking this very fine line between progressing and you know, challenging gender boundaries, for example. But there's so many other ways that ballet is being challenged, on television, whatever it may be. But then also really remaining true to this great art form that survived for so many hundreds of years. And I want to preserve that. I want to be part of the generation that does preserve that. But then also evolves it in a way that's healthy, in a way that, you know, that really serves the dancers.
Yeah. And you're right. It's that evolution, and it's respecting what was, what gave us the things that we have today, like what paved the way for our futures and our lives. But it's accepting the evolution is natural. It's the, you know, it's the oldest thing, isn't it, right? That we have to evolve with the times and
everybody around us is evolving, but yet somehow classical ballet is still stuck.
Yeah.
You have these really strange hierarchical power structures that just don't create the most productive work environment. And my husband is not in any way in the dance industry, and at his work, in order for him to be the most productive, his managers make sure that he's good at home and he has everything he needs in his personal life in order for him to flourish at work. Whereas all of that is totally disregarded as a dancer. You're told to put your life aside to pursue this career. And the minute we start to integrate modern work practices, healthy modern work practices that we see in, you know, companies where the workers are really happy, and there's a lot of tools and ways that the hierarchy of manager and worker is actually both really healthy and just all around you're more productive. And
yeah.
And work, the output, you know, how you perform on stage, how you work in the studio, how creative you feel. You can't feel your most creative when you're in an environment where you constantly feel oppressed and depressed.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that the ballet world can look to other industries where work environments are more productive and psychologically healthier, etc., and try and integrate that into the dance world like ASAP.
Yeah, no, you're dead on. And I think, again, what we were saying about the culture that's sewn into our histories with these opera houses and ballet, they were enjoyed by kings and queens. It was enjoyed by the nobility. And it's got this kind of like sparkly elixir, this sparkly like preserver over it that just means it can't be changed. But it is in some aspects massively outdated. And the damage it causes because of that backwards thinking, it can be tragic. It can be really, really tragic. And you're right, I think, how you get like the most bang for your buck, how you become the most profitable and successful. We really should transfer that into our ballet dancers, for goodness sake, you know, especially when we're so young. That's what I think makes it sometimes more flammable, is that we're so young and sensitive and vulnerable. And I think that's where you need the care more than ever. Our career is short enough. You don't want to clip it anymore.
No. And it's a creative industry, right? So, you know, so often we're not encouraged to figure out how we would perform a certain step or piece of choreography, or how we would interpret the music. And we're just told what to do. And I can see how harmful that can be if dancers, say, for example, try to go in a more commercial direction or whatever that may be, where, you know, you have a camera on you and you're told to just dance, and you're given absolutely no direction, and they, you know, you're in a casting and just told to dance. You know, if you don't have an understanding of what you want to do, of how you want to move, then how can you really be a creative asset to the team? So I think integrating more improvisation, getting dancers in touch with themselves, how they would express themselves within the training that they receive. I really try and focus on improvisation, but also individual interpretation, even within classical ballet training, but definitely with contemporary, so that dancers really start to feel things that might not be thought of by a director or a choreographer, and it might bring something really fresh and beautiful and new to the stage.
Yeah, and you're such an interesting person and very knowledgeable person to talk to this about, because you have done that flip-flopping. You've worked in the classical ballet companies, and you've been in these, you know, in LA in commercial industries, and that must have taught you such a lot about that. Were there moments where you did feel very misunderstood, unchallenged, and, you know, backward, where you didn't think there was that translation between what you were, what you had to offer as a dancer, and actually what was put in front of you?
Exactly. Yeah, it's definitely been something I've learned through trial and error, and it's something that I've kind of noticed other dancers and colleagues really take ownership of how they would like to kind of have that body of work feel in their bodies, you know. Mm-hmm. And there's something that's very liberating as a dancer when you have really blood, sweat, and tears, done everything you can to reach a certain standard, to reach a certain point, And now you can have fun with it and you can play with it. And that is the fun part. And I have to sometimes remind myself just to go to an open space, to put on a beautiful piece of music and just move, yeah. You know, and just see how those moments link and how I feel from moment to moment and from minute to minute as I move. It's a very important process of dance training and kind of building an artistic framework within each dancer so that they really have something to bring to a project and they are really valuable to any environment. And I'm noticing it more and more. And I think America has those liberties a lot more in a lot of ways. I've kind of been working with dancers here that are totally different to me, but they somehow kind of categorized in the same way. And there's kind of much less of a cookie cutter understanding of what dance is and what ballet is and what the function of dance is. And I think that's been a really good push for me coming from Europe, where I had one ideal of what I wanted to achieve, and one way to do a développé and one way to, you know, do a pirouette. And America has really opened my mind to so many different expressions of the same thing, and all of them are embraced. I mean, Americans love to embrace anything, really. They're excited to be watching dance, and so I think that embracing of that is really, really great. It can just be a little bit tough when it's the other way around, because then you constantly feel like you're being shut down by people who have very high standards and you're working for them. But to have it happen this way around has been perfect.
Yeah, that's nice. And you're right. And, you know, we've been talking about changing the system and that hopefully things will evolve, but actually we have to as well. And, you know, if you're in an environment where you feel like a fish out of water and not prepared, you have to test yourself and open your mind to how you adapt to that situation. I feel like that's been so evident with your career because of how much you've done and probably been in places you never thought you'd be at. Like we said earlier, this kind of changing path. When you've been doing that, especially when you were younger and you didn't know whether it would stick, you know, there's always, I think when you're young and you're starting out, you always have that silent voice in the back of your mind thinking like, well, it's not too late. You know, I can have a second career, like I can still nip it in the bud, which is kind of a bit, it's not nice, but it's true. But were there times like that in your career where you felt, oh, this isn't for me, I'm not taking to it. Should I just pack this in and go home?
Every damn day. Every damn day. I didn't really know how to give up.
Yeah.
I really thought that was the easy way out in a lot of ways. I really struggled to quit. And I don't know what it is about my character or my love for moving and dancing. I think it's a combination of different things, but there's something about the accessibility that you simply don't have in South Africa. You're geographically isolated. You are living in a country, a third world country, that has priorities a lot higher than your little artistic dreams, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so I knew that if I could just place myself in Europe, could somehow be, you know, a legal immigrant in any European, you know, Northern Hemisphere country, I'd be able to work and build my life from there. But there were times where the German government wanted to send me home, the Danish government, the British government, and you know, they would lock me out of their countries because my paperwork wasn't in line. And so I would have to fight really hard to just be in a place where I could build my life as an artist. And that is a very long, hard road, and it's you have to be incredibly lucky. You have to know the right people. You have to be smart and organized. And I really have it to owe to a lot of people that I'm even still, you know, living outside of South Africa. Mm. But there was something about, and it's been so evident now in COVID, there was something about me doing floor bar and bar at my kitchen and in my bedroom and literally on my bed because I had no other space. And I would continue, you know, physically keeping my body in training because I couldn't afford class or because I didn't have a job for, you know, there were 2 year periods where I wouldn't have a job. So I think that fight in me that I had sacrificed so much. I'd sacrificed a lifetime with my family. I'd sacrificed my whole identity as a South African. And I think I just didn't want to give up on all of those things that I'd sacrificed for so long. And I see that in so many dancers. All of our sacrifices are there. They're just often very different. And you just get to a point where to turn around and go back is almost a longer journey.
Yeah.
So I think I've just been able to grip my teeth and flare my nostrils and just keep kind of forging ahead. And a lot of the time I was given amazing opportunities and I would make huge strides in a very short amount of time, but then it would come back to a desert of nothing. One of the examples was when I followed my partner to Seattle, Washington, the States, where there was simply no opportunities for me. The Seattle dance community didn't accept me. There was no real inspiration for me there, apart from one or two choreographers like Donald Byrd. I have a huge respect for him and I love him, but then, you know, there may not have been funding or maybe I didn't fit in the company, whatever it may be. And so for a really long time, 2-3 year period, I was really stuck and I didn't have papers to work in America for 9 months because my paperwork was lost. And so those long periods of time, I had to hire studios. I had to take class at home. You know, I didn't have the plethora of online classes. I was my own teacher and I was my own cheerleader for so long. So when it came to COVID, I was using all of those skills of not giving up, of relying on myself, of reminding myself that I'm here for one reason, and that is for myself as a dancer. Not to please my parents, not to please my teachers, not to please my director. I'm dancing for me. And I think that's a very strong motivator. And it's something that I've always had. And I'm very lucky to have, because I think if you are doing it for something else or someone else, eventually the cracks widen and it falls apart. And to be honest, so it should. It's opened up so many of my friends' lives to say I've had enough and to move on and to have kids or to go down the academic route. And it's been the best decision they've ever made. So to really trust and know what you need and to have that intuition with really how the relationship with yourself is, how the relationship to your work is, to honor that and to make decisions accordingly in the moment without thinking about the future, the past, and just living in that moment and being intuitive.
Oh, I mean, I just love your honesty and thank you for speaking so honestly, because it can be so hard to find people to actually say it is really tough. The reality of ballet can be so bleak. The cattle calls, the endless emails with no replies, exactly like visa issues that we've already said, it can feel like you said every door is shut on you. And I really appreciate your honesty. And what you said is so true. That sort of, how do I quit? You've gotten so far, it becomes your religion. It becomes your entire identity. So to unpick that, you're right. It seems more work than it is, but it is, you have to know yourself, to know what's really in your best interest and make that leap.
And you might come out the other side and you might not, and either one is okay. I think we place so much pressure on ourselves to succeed or to get that job or to get that promotion, but at the end of the day, most of the time I've learned that if you don't get the job, if you don't get the promotion, it's really not the right path for you. Yeah. And it's so hard to swallow. It's a tough pill to swallow because it's everything you've worked for. It's everything you've wanted. But at the end of the day, the reality is what lands in your life, you deserve essentially. Maybe deserve is a hard word, but you attract. Mm-hmm. And so when I really accepted what I was as a dancer, I can very fluidly work as a showgirl alongside being, you know, a pure classical dancer. And so maybe I didn't want to be a showgirl, but going down that avenue had so many benefits and so many advantages too. So it's like, even if you don't want to be a contemporary dancer, or if you don't want to work on sets and in commercial work, try it anyway, because it could be, you know, that knock on the door means that there's something there that does work and that is easy. And I had to really learn how to accept those invitations. And when someone said to me, you know, you would really do well at Lido, Moulin Rouge in Paris, and I would just get angry because that's not what I want to do. Like, I don't want to be a showgirl. But at the end of the day, I'm a perfect showgirl. I'm a great height. I look great. I can animate and entertain and have a lot of fun doing it. And so I had to open doors I didn't want to open. And I think we often are, you know, oh, we go back to our hometowns and get a job there. And it's so disappointing because I wanted the big job in London or New York, whatever it may be. But maybe being at home has the advantages of being closer to your family. That's something that I have never had in my career. I've never worked professionally in South Africa. So I've never performed for my family in South Africa. So yeah, it's definitely an interesting thing to learn really over a long period of time as a dancer, that what you aspire to might not be right for you. And the sooner you accept that, the better. And the sooner you accept that, the more you can really, really grasp the opportunities that fit you. Yeah. And that are easy and work.
Yeah, and it just adds texture, doesn't it? You know, we kind of go into this with tunnel vision of what we want, but actually opening those doors, kind of really testing yourself, they give you a texture and you understand more about yourself, and it pushes you and you evolve from that. And I think that's definitely, yes, I've experienced it. A lot of people I'm around have experienced it as well. And obviously so much of it is age and patience and kind of waiting your turn, but it does come, I think, for so many people, and you do end up kind of where you're meant to be. I'm interested to ask you as well, with the kind of variety of jobs you've had and some really like amazing ones that I've like working with Botticelli and doing all these fascinating things. Has there been one that you felt really changed you as an artist and really kind of solidified who you were, gave you the confidence and really meant the most to you?
I think it's those jobs where you just don't know how it's going to work out. In London for Inala, which is this really beautiful production that was started with a former dancer from Royal Ballet and a composer. And they had collaborated with Mark Baldwin, who was the director of Rumbe at the time. So it was this really interesting clash of ballet and contemporary dance, but to African music. So Ladies of Black Mambazo were this an African choral group. You know, I grew up listening to their music. They're advocates of peace. They sang at Mandela's inauguration. So it brought all of my worlds together, and yeah. I've been involved in the production since day one. And I always love returning to London to perform with them and going on tour. And we had to adapt the production to perform at the Royal Albert Hall for one night only. It was a huge opportunity. And because I'd done this ballet so many times, you know, adapting, it wasn't very difficult. But what made it really challenging is that the dates, for whatever reason, lined up exactly to go on tour with Andrea Bocelli 2 days afterwards. And so I would have rehearsals at Royal Albert Hall, and then I would have to rehearse late in the evening. But I was second cast for Bocelli, and there was a new male partner who was hired. And so he had to learn everything from scratch as well as me. But the choreographer and the dancer, who's really the signature dancer for Bocelli and travels with him everywhere, she had to figure out this partnership with him, and it was a struggle. And so my rehearsal time, of all the hours we had scheduled, literally ended up being 2 hours of just time together. And it was a short tour, 3 tours. Each audience was around 15,000 people. It was principal roles, so it was literally just Bocelli and orchestra and us dancing, very complicated lifts. You know, like I was saying, we were both really tall. And I had this crazy one-night performance at Royal Albert Hall. And so it's very exciting to have that happen in your career and as a dancer, but to have it happen within 2 days of each other was really, really challenging. And I think those are the times where I really thrive, because I become laser focused, I become very calm, and it's the only way that I can actually achieve the impossible. And so the Royal Albert Hall performance was out of this world. I mean, we had the entire place, 5,000 seats, on their feet by the end of the night. And as the only South African dancer on stage. I was incredibly proud to be a part of this. And then the Bocelli performances, there were a couple of very tricky lifts and it was not easy, but overall those three shows we had together were flawless and were so enjoyable. Not only did we perform really well, but we both enjoyed it. And the team was really happy. You know, I was stepping in for someone who they're so comfortable with, who they know very, very well. And I'm coming in as this outsider, also with a wig on because I've now shaved my head. I need to look Italian. So I think with all the variables and the fact that I was so far away from home that, you know, my loved ones couldn't see either of those performances, my husband, my family, you know, they weren't able to see them and be there and support me. It was amazing how much I enjoyed them and how much kind of work had to go in on such a like mental level and visualization, because I just did not have the hours to rehearse. So that was definitely a highlight. And it was just last year, about a year ago now. And I think I really was able to achieve that by a culmination of literally 10 years of skills and coping mechanisms and just, you know, little things that you just know as an experienced dancer. You know, it's just those moments of taking time to breathe and not get too caught up in the excitement so that you have energy and that it can sustain you. And I think keeping calm in those circumstances, I've never really been able to do in the past, but I think when it was really needed, I was able to unlock that real sense of calm and professionalism and have a really beautiful memory of what could otherwise have been.
Yeah. No, it sounds so moving, and I long for moments like that in my own career. It sounds so lovely. And yeah, probably if that had happened to you 10 years earlier, would you've been able to do it? Would you've been able to manage it? But I just love that. Yeah, exactly. I just love that sense of, you know, the pressure makes diamonds, and that you actually could, you stepped up and now you have those memories, like those are yours. You earned them, you worked for them, and that, you know, you get to keep them forever. Oh, I love it. So moving.
Yeah. And enjoy it along the way. I mean, Beverly Knight, who I'm such a big fan of, I've seen her on the West End, and she was one of the guest singers with Bocelli, and just, I mean, I was dancing to her voice. It was such a moment. But to be able to have, you know, the ability to not get too wrapped in the fact that there's going to be 15,000 people, but to go over to her and say hi and introduce myself and, you know, exchange a little joke. And I think those moments become really powerful when you look back at your career, at the relationships that you've built with the guys backstage if you're on tour for a long time, or the colleagues that you have. You know, these are your family, essentially. And especially like me, when you're very in and out of different environments, I like to build those connections quickly so that I'm constantly gathering this amazing collection of characters that I've met on different jobs and different stages and different sets around the world. And that's always been a motivator for me, that when I go to work, that I make connections with the people behind the dancers and backstage and, you know, all the individuals that you're essentially working with. And that's something that I'll take away with me from those very high pressure moments, is the ability to just enjoy the company that you're around and to not get overwhelmed by how many eyes are on you, but more, you know, what eyes really, really matter, and, you know, really being fun to work with, and knowing that those relationships are, of course, really strategic, and it means you can get hired again. But ultimately, it's walking away having an experience on set or on stage that that you can remember with warmth.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. You paint such a beautiful picture. And like I said, I only wish to have those memories myself. So thank you so much for chatting to me today, Ashley. Honestly, you've just unpacked so much goodness and so much insight. There's so much that I have to really fight to try and find little sound bites. So thank you so much. It's been so great to chat to you.